Live 365 is the service that provides the server facilities for this and nearly 20,000 other internet broadcast stations. So when a major policy announcement comes from that outfit, it's big news. This week, Live 365 announced that it will soon be inserting audio ads at the beginning of streams and later moving on to putting ads midstream. To find out more about this and other Live 365 issues, we're joined by Peter Rothman, the Chief Technical Officer for Live 365.
Well, Peter, when I first started using Live 365, there were only a handful of us. I think that was in about May or June of last year. You must be delighted with the phenomenal growth that you've experienced in such a short time.
Well, we're certainly delighted. Also, you know, a bit sobering at times. Certainly come a long way. About a year ago, we had 300 broadcasters, and today we have almost 20,000.
In retrospect, do you think that the product came to market a bit too early? Because in those early days, there were a few issues, and I guess they were inevitable when you look at the incredible technology that's involved in the bandwidth and things. Would it have been better to hang on a bit longer and do some more private testing, do you think?
Well, you know, I come from a different world and a different time. I've worked on a lot of big aerospace projects in a prior existence, and that's how we did things in that world. You know, you spent a long time thinking, more time thinking than building, you know, and the internet space doesn't really permit that sort of thing. You know, people bring things to market very quick and dirty, and then they repair and refine, and you end up with, you know, various levels and layers of parts that are various stages of repair and disrepair and so forth. And that's sort of the way the internet's been built. You know, it's even been formalized as a strategy by companies. Guy Kawasaki, who is pretty well known in the internet space, was an evangelist at Apple and now author of a great number of books on business strategy. You know, has a book called Rules for Revolutionaries. In that book, he said, one of the chapters is, "Don't worry, be crappy." And, you know, it's pretty much a formal strategy here in Silicon Valley to build something, you know, get it out there, let people respond to it, and fix things that don't work. And you know, that's sort of what we've been doing, and it continues to be the methodology of getting things to market quickly and refining and repairing as necessary.
And I guess if you don't do that, somebody else is going to get out there and do it first, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's certainly the thought process behind it, and you know, the good news is that, you know, we are way ahead as a business. And the bad news is that, you know, there's been various times in the history of the service where things didn't work as quite as well as we wanted them to.
You've decided to insert ads at the beginning of streams, and eventually, a little while later, you're going to be inserting ads midstream. Is that something that you always had in mind, or has the business plan changed?
No, the business plan has changed and been refined, and will continue to be changed and refined, just like the technology. It's you know, an evolving document as the environment changes. But it's always been the concept that the company would be advertising supported in large part, but not solely. And it's always been the concept that that would include audio advertising. And that's been in our user agreements from day one, that we have the right to do that. It's been in our business plan from day one. It's been a long time under development from a technology perspective and from a business perspective, and it wasn't until the last several months that there were organizations and you know, just the ability to actually sell the ads wasn't really in place within the industry, and the audience sizes weren't there and so on. So you know, this may seem to some that it's a sudden change of focus or course. That's not true. It's just the unfolding of time, and it's become the appropriate time and place to do that.
Yes, your comment about the audience not being there in the past is interesting, because there is quite a high broadcaster to listener ratio, and I guess you'll
depends
be...
Depends how you measure it. Do you measure it by peak number of listeners, or do you measure it by unique listeners per day?
Yes, I suppose, I'm not sure if it's on the service anymore, but you used to get a number that told you how many broadcasters were online and how many people were listening.
Right. There's several reasons why we removed that. One is we feel like it emphasizes the wrong number, which is, you know, kind of to my point, you know, peak simultaneous usage, we have, you know, typically in the vicinity of about 6,000 simultaneous users right now at peak. So we're not embarrassed about that number, but we think it's misleading in a number of ways. I mean, first of all, if you look at any website, you don't go to a website, and websites aren't generally measured by how many people are simultaneously using it. How many people are on Yahoo right now? Nobody has any idea, right? I mean, Yahoo probably has an idea, but that's not a published statistic that people look at. That's not what the advertisers are interested in. It's not even really a particularly meaningful number, you know, to anybody. What's much more interesting, we think, is, you know, how many unique people are hearing this content? What's the reach of the service? And, you know, we're getting tens of thousands, well in excess of the number of broadcasters, unique listeners per day. Okay? Multiples of the number of broadcasters.
Yeah,
so,
that certainly puts a different complexion on it.
Yeah, and from a business standpoint, there's two parts. There's the broadcaster perspective. I know you're a broadcaster, so there's that perspective that I'll address, and then there's the business perspective. Let me address the business perspective first. We don't want to necessarily encourage people to drive up peak listenership at the peak moment of the day. That's what determines the cost of running the service, the height of that peak. So anything that reinforces that behavior is probably not the right thing for the business. What we derive revenue from, on the other hand, is time spent listening, essentially, total listener minutes. So we want to encourage listenership over the course of the whole, you know, listening period. We want to encourage large amounts of listening, but not necessarily all at once. Now, from the broadcaster's perspective, I think people want to know how many people are listening, and they want to have some feel that there's an audience for what they're doing. And for better or worse, historically, this number has been the thing that people latched onto. That dates back to the origins of Shoutcast, not anything that we did. Sort of a legacy from that, and I think it's wrong for all the same reasons. People still want it. So for individual broadcasts, you can still see how many people are listening to your broadcast. And we will be in the future, you know, giving broadcasters much more complex and meaningful reporting on their listenership, you know, in terms of time of day, in terms of total unique listeners, things like that. That's one of the reasons, you may recall, a few weeks ago, we basically stopped listing our main directory, the sort of guest, we call guest broadcasters, that these are people that weren't really using our service, but were registering their broadcasts in our directory, and we had no way of auditing their listener numbers at all. That was part of the, you know, the process of getting these enhanced statistics to our broadcasters, because they're going to be audited by outside parties. We have to eliminate those unauditable broadcasts.
Let's look at the specifics of what you're planning from November 1, and I understand that the first step is to insert an advertisement before listeners start hearing the stream.
Right. Is
that...
It'll be a pre-roll ad.
Yep. Like 30 seconds?
Yeah, probably 15 or 30.
Okay. Now, is that ad going to be heard by everybody who tunes in? In other words, if you link to your Live365 server with an M3U file or a PLS file from your own website?
It's server side, so you'll still hear it.
Okay. And that ad is then going to play, presumably if people drop their connections, often they have poor modem connections, every time you reconnect you are going to hear that ad or another ad again.
Yeah, we're aware of this issue, frankly, on November 1st, that's likely to be the case, but we are looking into some solutions where if a person had recently been connected and returned from the same IP address, they would not be delivered the ad, potentially. So we're trying to work on that technology, but that won't be in place on November 1st. You know, we're aware of the issue. Again, it goes to sort of what's the methodology of getting things out there. And, you know, we're going to roll out the pre-rolls. It's not going to be perfect. This is one of the issues that we're aware of. We don't know how bad it's going to be, really. But it's certainly something we're watching and we're trying to find a solution for. I don't believe there's a complete completely perfect solution that solves everybody's problems, but certainly something that could detect if you had just been connected, dropped off, now I'm trying to reconnect within a minute or something, so don't give me the pre-roll ad again. I believe something like that's going to be feasible and solve many of these problems.
Now, this pre-roll ad is going to be for all three streamers in all of your three categories, in other words, EasyCast, Live Broadcasters, and Relay?
That's correct.
Okay. Then you're going to be moving into inserting ads midstream. Can you tell me a bit more about how that will work and which broadcasters are affected in the first instance?
Well, right now, that's only going to impact EasyCast broadcasters. It's going to roll out subsequent to the rollout of pre-roll ads. I don't have a specific date at this time for in-stream ads, but it's going to be later in the month of November. And that's our expectation at this time. The way it's going to work is the server will, at a predetermined periodic interval, insert an advertisement MP3 file for play. Essentially, the playlist that's created by the user will be paused. This file will be played, and then it will be resumed. In essence, that's how it works. So it won't interrupt. It's not going to interrupt a file. It's not going to be inserted in the, you know, at some predetermined time point, so it would interrupt the file and play. That's not going to happen. So it'll be inserted into the stream without interrupting the content. And as I said, it'll come at, you know, with a specific frequency, which we're conceiving right now of being approximately 4 per hour. And if you have a longer, if you have a like a mixed broadcast where it was really long, like a long MP3 file, say an hour long, then the advertisements would be saved up till the end. Then when there's a break between tracks, they would be played at that time. So it's really up to the broadcaster to manage that. How do they want to do it? They want to have a bunch of long, you know, a small number of long MP3 files and then ads kind of get inserted in clusters, at, you know, at the ends of those, or do they want a bunch of shorter MP3 files and the ads kind of come in, but not in big chunks, in little chunks all throughout.
Are you working on technology that will facilitate the insertion of ads into live streams as well?
Yes, we are. There's a number of different live broadcasting techniques, and each of them requires a different kind of technical solution. The simplest one is within our LiveCast program, where we control that product and how it interacts with the server, and making that product support a server-side ad insertion is possible, and we will be pursuing that. With Relay broadcasts, it's a whole different situation, and I can't really tell you how we're going to address that yet.
Obviously, while I expect there will be people listening to this program who don't normally listen so that they can hear you, the majority of the audience that we normally have is blind, and at the moment, Livecast is not accessible, and so blind users are using Winamp and Shoutcast.
Right.
You're not looking at phasing Winamp and Shoutcast support out?
We have no plans to do that today. There's a number of issues. I mean, those are products that we don't control the behavior of, and then there's others. Category creates a number of support headaches for us. They're not particularly user friendly. Although I understand that for the blind community, that's a different thing. Those tools are difficult to use. They're technically complex, and we end up supporting a lot of that. And that's not really a viable long term solution. So we have no plans of phasing out support for those things at this time, but it is a headache for us.
Right. I noticed that just while we're on the subject of accessibility, that you do seem to go to considerable lengths to make sure that there are alt tags for just about everything on the site, which is absolutely appreciated. So presumably, if you did get to the point where you were going to phase out Winamp support, you might be able to work to deal with the accessibility issues in Livecast.
Well, we're sensitive to this issue. It's really interesting to us, and we certainly didn't start the service with the idea of facilitating communication for people that were vision impaired, but that's been something that a community have come to the service and been a strong supporter of the service, as you know. And so we're learning along with you, and it's something that we found, you know, along the way that we didn't know about. Livecast isn't accessible in the appropriate ways today. We're well aware of that problem. We recognize it as a problem. We have, you know, limited resources and business objectives to pursue and so on. But absolutely, I know that it's an issue, and we wouldn't phase out support for tools that you can use and then only replace it with something that you couldn't use. That would make no sense. So that'll evolve over the coming months, but certainly is a goal to make Livecast accessible to the programs that you use and so forth. It's just not something that we knew much about when we got started.
Sure. And Easy Loader works great, by the way.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We're moving, we're going to be moving forward on, you know, a second version of EasyCast and Easy Loader, kind of merging those two things, and that will be done so it is accessible. And, that, again, it's a learning process for us, too.
Now, you do have broadcasters who connect with a line-in type system so that they're relaying from a regular studio mixer with CD players or whatever. How will you manage to achieve getting the ads into their streams when it's just one continuous stream of data?
Yeah, I mean, that's, it gets complicated. And, you know, the technical solutions are few and far between. They're all problematic. Probably we're going to have server-side insertion, which means that they are going to have to agree to, a break in their programming at specified times or when a specified signal is exchanged. This may require, since some people are doing this with Winamp today, for example, a Winamp plugin to be built that would facilitate that exchange of signals. Within Livecast, it's relatively simpler for us to do something like that. But I don't foresee us doing anything where the stream would be interrupted sort of randomly midstream, and then an ad would be played, and then it would pick up again. That's not what we're going to do. An alternative solution is to enter into sort of a business arrangement with such parties. There aren't that many of them, so this might make sense. And as people get more sophisticated, we're going to need to do things like that anyway. That's another way to go, would be to enter into an agreement with us, and then the broadcaster would either agree to carry some of our ads, and that would be a legal commitment between the two parties. Or, they could enter an agreement with us where they got to run their own ads and they'd pay us a fee for use of the service. I mean, it just depends what's appropriate and right for that person.
You have a large international audience and a number of people broadcasting outside of the U.S. You also have people who are broadcasting to a specific audience that may be sensitive to certain kinds of ads, whether it be environmentalist groups or religious groups. How much control will there be, if any, over the ads that the broadcasters have on their streams?
Right. International, let me just talk to that for a second. We do have about 20% of our audience that's international. We have broadcasters and listeners in 70 countries. It's really an amazing thing that happened. We have done, literally nothing yet to really facilitate that international support. We are going to do some things in the very near future that will be changing that, but that's an amazing phenomenon unto itself, just the international aspect of the service. There's different nationalities, there's different languages, there's different sort of social and religious orientations on the service. Our goal is to be open to all of them, to extent possible, not to offend anyone, but to do that, without censoring anything either. We're really not interested in censoring people's broadcasts, and that's not what we want to do, and we don't want to get into that game. So it's a challenge. Certainly, there's religious broadcasts, and there's kinds of advertisements that they might find objectionable. That might be for whatever condoms or something like that. of all, I don't really anticipate the service carrying apps like that. But realistically, in the early days of this, we don't necessarily get to pick who our advertisers are. It's evolving, you know, it's a new thing. So there's going to be some time where, you know, we're going to have to take the ads that we can get. And, you know, I don't anticipate any of them being objectionable, but, you know, it's a very varied audience. So some people may, you know, not be happy with them. I know some people were unhappy with some banners that we ran, thought they were for gambling, but they're not. The game, a gaming site that ran a lot of banners on our site, but some people construed that as gambling, which it wasn't. So, you know, it's hard to keep everybody happy all the time. In the future, we would like to develop a service whereby the broadcaster could select from a library of ads, choose to take certain ads and not others. But that, you know, relies on both us developing a technology solution and a sufficient body of advertising being available to make such a choice. You know, I mean, if there's only one or two advertisers, it's not much of a choice, right?
One of the problems, I suppose, with the banner ads is that they're only visible to those people who go through the Live 365 playlist window. Have you ever looked at stopping people from going through any other way?
We've never done that. We have no plans to stop people from doing that the other way, you know, from attaching the service other ways. And the reality is that the future of the service is to be delivered into handheld devices, into people's, you know, living rooms through various kinds of audio components, into cars. And those things are not going to necessarily accept banner advertisements anyway. So, you know, no, it's not our intention to prevent people from accessing the service in other ways at all.
One of the most controversial decisions that Live 365 felt it needed to make was to delist from Shoutcast.com.
Right.
And it occurs to me that one of the primary reasons given at the time was that because the banner ads weren't being displayed, really Live 365 wasn't benefiting in any way from revenue-wise from accesses from Shoutcast.com. But if you're putting audio ads in there, presumably that might make listing on Shoutcast.com a possibility again.
From our perspective, it does. Certainly.
Are you saying that AOL is the problem?
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that there's two companies and we have different interests and perspectives, and both of us have to come to, should there be a deal, it has to be beneficial to both parties and perceived as being beneficial, and so far we haven't found that deal. So this does change certain aspects of our position with respect to that, though, for sure.
Why does there actually have to be a deal as such? I mean, if you're able to send Shoutcast-compatible information to the yp.shoutcast.com, doesn't that automatically make you eligible to list on their directory?
See, it's not that clear, because we don't actually use their technology. We don't use their server technology. We have our own server technology. So they really have no obligation to take that listing from us. And because we're such a large number of stations, the way we were doing that in the past, they felt adversely impacted the performance of their systems. On our side, you know, they came to us with certain proposals how to resolve that. That would require us to bear certain not insignificant engineering expense. And the question is, you know, who should pay for that, right? I mean, who's benefiting and who's... It's unclear, right? There's a discussion to be had over that. And so it's not true that they have an obligation to carry our listings. We just give it to them. And that needs to be the subject of a business relationship. And there are aspects like how technically we deliver that content to them so it doesn't affect their performance that really require a relationship to be resolved. Also, you know, we have a lot of concerns. I have to be frank about it. Aside from the audio ads, which, you know, now move us closer to a relationship in some sense, but there are other things. I have some grave concerns about the accountability and the auditability of statistics that are presented on Shoutcast. I don't want to belabor the point, but there's a lot of cheating going on. It's it persists today. You know, the people that are doing it know who they are. But it, you know, it really taints the entire business. And this is a business to us. We're not just hobbyists. And we do want to be audited, and we do want, it's a prerequisite for us to sell ads that we're auditable and so on. And just, it kind of muddies the water when you mix stations that are really, you know, they're being audited, that are, you know, the listener numbers that they're publishing are real and, you know, measurable and auditable and honest, and then, you know, you have other people just making stuff up, and we throw that all into a pot and stir it, you know, but I don't know.
Certain AOL people have from time to time made noises about what they call audio homesteading, and I wonder whether you anticipate at some point AOL to be providing bandwidth in the same way that Live 365 is.
Well, I mean, they haven't done it yet. They make a lot of noises. So I can't, you know, really comment on what they will or won't do. It's not so easy. You know, that's one of the things that I think people fail to realize about our service. There's 20,000 broadcasts today, and, you know, we're building a system that can carry multiples of that, okay? The entire network of real networks, customers, all of their customers, according to Rob Glazer in his keynote at the recent Real Networks conference, all of their customers broadcast 7,500 channels. We broadcast 19,000 just ourselves. Okay, so it's an incredibly large system. It required the development of special technology. We couldn't use existing servers to do it. It didn't work. And, you know, it's not so easy. I'm not saying they can't do it, but they have not yet done it.
It must be costing absolutely megabucks in bandwidth to do what you're doing.
Well, I, you know, I can't comment on the specific costs and the specific strategy we've taken to reducing those costs, but you know, this is not a toy system. It's a big system. It's the most complicated system I've ever personally worked on. I've worked on, you know, fighter aircraft. I worked on the stealth bomber. Just to put it in perspective, it's big, it's expensive, and it's complicated.
Just by way of contrast, if somebody was to buy their own T1, which would range, I think, from, say, in the US, about $800 to $1,200 a month, I believe,
mm-hmm.
How many listeners would they be able to support on a T1?
Oh, well, let's get out a calculator here. That's 1.5 megabits per second. And that is... Is that right?
I think that's about right, yep.
And each broadcast, typically our average is in the 40 kilobits per second range. So we have some high bandwidth and some low bandwidth broadcasts. And if you average it out, it's in the vicinity of 40 kilobits per second. You know, if you just divide 1.5 million by 40,000, which is approximately correct, you know, you're going to get about 37.
And you're offering a maximum of 365 listeners per broadcaster.
Right. You know, but most people don't get there. I mean, that's, you know, it's not so easy to get 300 broadcasters or 300 listeners simultaneously, as it turns out. But, you know, for $800 or $1,200 a month, which is, you know, probably more like 1,200, my understanding. You can get a T1, and then you can go and set up your own server at whatever cost that has, and you can maintain it, you know, at whatever cost that has. And then you can go and negotiate your own licenses with BMI and ASCAP and the RIAA and pay them fees annually and so forth. I mean, an individual can go do that if that's what they want to do. That's a very serious undertaking. It's expensive. It's complex. You know, we offer services that we feel are very price competitive with that. Even our private label radio service, we feel is competitive with that. You know, we take a lot of the complexity out of it.
K, Can we talk about the opt-out provisions that you're planning to offer? My understanding is that you're only offering opting out of the insertion of ads in the middle of the stream. You can't opt out from the ad at the beginning, is that right?
Well, I mean, that's the preliminary concept. We've gotten some feedback from the audience that they'd like to be able to opt out of both, and we're discussing it.
Are you able to give me any more details about pricing and how the opting out will work?
Well, what's going to happen, I'm not going to divulge the exact structure simply because it's not finalized. It's not a secret. I just don't want to give you misinformation. But it's going to be in the low tens of dollars per month. And coupled with that will be a restriction on the maximum number of listeners. So you have to pay a monthly fee. It's going to be affordable, we think, to the average person, and you won't get 365 listeners for that. You'll get some significantly smaller number as your maximum, but you won't have ads.
Does that mean that you can pay more for more listener capacity?
Yeah, you'll be able to do that. And there'll probably be, again, this is, you know, subject to some change, but the concept is there'll be a, you know, sort of generic low-end package that anyone will be able to get just by filling out a form. And then for larger capacities, you know, that will be a business arrangement between the parties. So you'd actually have to have a conversation with us about it.
I wonder whether you'd considered opting in instead of opting out. I noticed that the Topica email service has a revenue system where people share in the revenue, I think similar to what Live365 is proposing. But you can opt out for free, and the incentive to opt in is the fact that you will get some revenue, and maybe broadcasters would want to make some money from their streams. Did you look at that model?
Well, we are planning revenue sharing, so those people that choose to accept advertisements will able to receive revenue share from the advertisements that run in their broadcast. So, I mean, I think it's kind of a matter of semantics here. I mean, we aren't considering a service where, you know, it's opt-in and revenue share, or don't opt-in and it's free. That's not on the table. The free service will carry ads. The ad-free service will carry a fee. That's, you know, the way it's going to be structured. Whether you opt-in or opt-out is sort of almost semantics, I think, in some level. But, you have a choice. Do you want to pay and have no ads, or do you want to not pay and accept the ads? That's the choice.
Okay. When you probably had a look a few weeks ago at the very public and somewhat embarrassing backdown by e-groups who put ads at the top of their messages and had a mini riot on their hands from their customers, you weren't concerned that a similar thing may happen in Live365's case?
Oh, no, we were very concerned. We remain very actively concerned about this issue, but we look out at the world and we say, what are the working examples of business models? And there's not very many media subscription models that are available as working examples. And there's literally none outside of pornography on the internet. But there's a couple exceptions to that I know about. Wall Street Journal, okay, and the Washington Post apparently claims that they're doing well with the subscription model. But those are, you know, pornography and newspapers. We're not either of those. And so, you know, there's some doubt as to whether a subscription model can really support the service. That leaves us with advertising, you know. And there is ample evidence, I mean, conventional terrestrial radio, that people are willing to accept advertising to a greater or lesser extent in their media in exchange for free access to that, and television being another example. So, we're going to offer a subscription model and an advertising model, and if the subscription model wins out and there's no advertising anywhere on the service, then, you know, that's great, but it has to be a sustainable business model for the company.
How do you respond to people who say, though, that what's happening now is a fundamental change in the nature of the relationship between the broadcasters and the company, in that the broadcasters provide you the content for free so that you can go and sell banner ads?
I'm not sure I understand that position. I mean,
essentially, what I'm getting at is that if it wasn't for the broadcasters, there would be no content on Live 365. And so what some people have said in the forums that I've been reading over the last couple of days,
right,
is that people are spending a lot of time and money and energy in giving you guys content so that you can go and sell the banner ads, and that now they feel, I'm trying to think of a way to describe it that's not too emotive, but they feel like the rules have been changed on them.
Right. Well, you know, I don't agree. If banner ads were enough, and it comes down to sustaining the business and sustaining the service. And we are trying to do what it's going to take to sustain the service. And, you know, I don't agree that we've changed the rules. The rules specifically have stated from the beginning and were structured that way because this was in the first business plan that we wrote, that we have the right to insert audio advertisements in the stream. So I don't believe and I don't agree that's a change in direction. You know, we didn't put, you know, warning signs on every page in the site saying, you know, warning, you know, audio advertisements coming soon, because we didn't, you know, we didn't know when that was going to happen. But I don't agree that it's a change in direction. It's the same thing as the banner ads. You know, the audience gets free access to the site. In exchange for that, we get to monetize, you know, that through advertising. And you know, the thing that has changed is that we're actually saying now we're going to give some of that back. Okay? And some people are going to make, you know, a decent amount of money off of this. I mean, I don't think anyone's going to retire, but, you know, $100, couple hundred bucks with today's audience sizes from some of the top-rated streams. So that's what we're talking about. So, you know, if you imagine the audience size being bigger, which we're all working towards, you know, this could be a substantial and significant benefit to some of the top broadcasters. I think what's changed is we're offering to get something back, not that we have changed what we're doing.
So are you bracing yourself for some cancelling of accounts and things as a result of this?
I haven't. I mean, sure. I mean, we're concerned, and that's why we went to the community and wanted to have an open discussion about it. That's, you know, why we did that, the way we did it. I mean, we could have just done this and not said anything to anybody, right? But we didn't want to do that. We wanted to engage in a conversation. So far, we haven't seen anything like that. In fact, we've had an increase in the number of stations being graded during this time period. So I don't think that's what's happening right now. But, you know, we want to make the service be something that satisfies people's needs. That's, you know, it's clearly in our interest to do that. We have to balance that with the economic realities, which, you know, frankly, the broadcasters and listeners aren't always in a position to fully understand or know about.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on the program, and I hope that this has shed a bit more light than heat on the subject for those who are Live 365 broadcasters or looking at being one, and wish you all the best for the future.
Great. Thanks a lot, Jonathan. I'd just like to just make a parting comment, which is, you know, we are, you know, really serious. We do want feedback. The message boards are a great place to do it, or you can send us email. I'll give my personal email address. It's prothman, prothman@live365.com, and you can send me email directly if that's what you want to do.